Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. If you are a regular listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, this is where we talk about what's going on in the economy and the markets and what it might mean for you and your money. Each week, I interview a guest expert or two, and joining me on today's program will be Mr. Roger Davis. His book is titled, Wall Street is Just Not That Into You. And on the second half of today's program, Mr. John Rubino, who is the co-author of The Money Bubble, will join me. You'll want to stay tuned for both interviews in light of a lot of the turmoil that we see going on in the markets and a lot of the volatility that exists. And we also have some educational resources available to folks here in the West Michigan area that I'd like to remind you of in light of the fact that Social Security benefit collection rules have changed. That's as of November of last year, so these changes are very new and will affect many out there in our listening audience. I would like to invite you to a free Social Security maximization workshop. We have three workshops coming up during the month of March. You can get more information by visiting socialsecuritydinner.com. We'll be at the Highlands Golf Club on March the 1st, Stonewater March the 10th, and Boulder Creek on March the 29th. All these meetings, as I said, begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. A complimentary dinner is also served. And again, you can register or get more information at socialsecuritydinner.com. We also have on March the 12th, which is a Saturday, our new retirement rules class coming up. If you are planning for retirement, this is not your mom and dad's retirement. There are a lot of additional things to consider today. Debt levels are higher today in the private sector and public sector than at the beginning of the Great Depression, and we believe that will lead to predictable economic consequences that we talk about at the new retirement rules class. The class will be held on Saturday, March the 12th at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. The cost for the class, including lunch for you and a guest, all the handouts and books, $49. More information is available at newretirementrules.com, and you can register there as well. The website again, newretirementrules.com. I'm pleased to have, as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Roger C. Davis. Roger is the CEO of Woodridge Wealth Management, and he is the author of the book, Wall Street's Just Not That Into You, An Insider's Guide to Protecting and Growing Wealth. And Roger, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Well, Roger, let me just start. Great title of the book, Wall Street's Just Not That Into You. What's the premise of the book?
Well, that's not an idea that's foreign to most of your listeners, probably, but the premise of the book is that investors cannot depend on Wall Street to give them the advice that they need to succeed in the next 10 or 15 years. In my view, a simple diversification of assets won't be sufficient to manage risk. And as you probably know, Wall Street manages risk almost exclusively through asset allocation and diversification, which, by the way, is a good thing. But it's insufficient, in my view, to manage the sort of risk and volatility that we're going to have in the equity markets and perhaps the fixed income markets in the next 2 to 10 to 15 years.
Roger, let's just back up just a second and define asset allocation as Wall Street would for our listeners that may not be familiar. Could you just give us a 101 definition?
Sure. Well, your typical listener would go to a financial advisor and he would ask a list of questions that have to do with the investor's age, their attitude about risk or attitude about volatility. How would you respond if your investments went down by X percent? How would you respond if they went up by Y percent? What's your timeline? How much do you have? 10 years? Do you have 25 years? Are you about to retire? And they ask these questions that are important, and it's important for the advisor to know the answers to these questions, but the questions aren't nearly comprehensive enough. And so what happens is the advisor will take that information and run it through a program that looks at historical rates of return and historical correlation ratios between asset classes. So just to simplify that a bit, historically, you know, international stocks have not been as highly correlated to U.S. stocks, and there's some diversification benefit there. In the short term, bonds, you know, have a low correlation to stocks, and that's the idea. And small caps do well sometimes when large caps are not. So the idea, and it's not a flawed idea, by the way, it's a valid idea, but the idea is that by getting this information about the investor, their timeline, age, and that sort of thing, and then looking back at the historical behavior of the available asset classes, which, by the way, are stocks, and then there's small cap, large cap, value, growth, mid cap, bonds, government bonds, corporate bonds, junk bonds, then international equities, emerging markets, developed markets, and then there's this other asset class called alternative investments, and these are investments that shouldn't have have a low correlation to all the other asset classes in theory. So the idea is by looking back at how these things behaved in the past, we can put together an asset mix that will give the investor the sort of experience they'll stay with for a long period of time. So that's the traditional definition, albeit a long-winded one, of asset allocation and diversification.
Now, that's a perfect premise for building here. And if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Mr. Roger C. Davis. Roger is the author of the book, Wall Street's Just Not That Into You. And, Roger, we haven't chatted about your forecast for the stock market, but when you take a traditional asset allocation approach, I'm reminded of this rule of thumb that if you're 60 years old, 60% of your assets should be in bonds, 40% maybe in stocks, and you mentioned various sub-asset classes of stocks. But moving ahead, why do you feel like that traditional approach to asset allocation won't serve investors well?
Well, for a number of reasons. First, let me address what you just said about the sort of rule of thumb about 60. You know, the age of an investor should allocated to bonds, and then the rest, the balance invested in stocks. Rules of thumb are decent sort of guides or ideas, but that illustrates what could be a real problem for investors, particularly investors that are retired or will be relying on their assets to create income. And that is this: if we enter an inflationary bear market, which, as you know, is a period of time during which the rate of inflation is increasing, then bond prices will decline. They'll deteriorate, as you well know. And we've had a bull market in bonds, basically declining interest rates since the early 1980s. It's a very long-term bull market. And in the last two bear markets, in the dot-com crash and then in the financial crisis, investors who held a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds did better, than those who were more heavily invested in stocks. And the reason is that bonds held up well or better than other asset classes. And so investors have been you know, the information that they've got, their experience that they've had over the last 15 years tells them that a portfolio of 60% bonds, 40% stocks will do better in bear markets. And that's not the case in all bear markets. And if we enter an inflationary bear market, then, you know, of course, stock prices will do poorly. Stock performance will do poorly. But their fixed income portfolio, their bonds, will likely do even worse. And so the experience that many investors are expecting if things get choppy or rough will not be reality. And they'll be, you know, we're at 50-year lows in interest rates. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to enter an inflationary bear market, but if we do, people with long-term bonds are going to get hammered, as you know. And so that's, you know, the problem number one with that rule of thumb is that it sort of rules out all possibility of it not working. And we know that's not the case.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for that segment. And certainly in the next segment, we'll continue chatting with Mr. Roger Davis. We'll get his take on where investors might look to make not only some decent returns, but maybe even just return of capital will be important. We'll continue our conversation with Roger Davis when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. If you're not yet a subscriber to my free weekly newsletter titled Portfolio Watch, it's easy to subscribe. Just visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. I'm pleased to be chatting today with Mr. Roger Davis. Roger's book, Wall Street's Just Not That Into You, is available at Amazon and fine bookstores everywhere. I'd encourage you to check it out. We're chatting with Roger about his belief, and I would share that belief, that traditional asset classes might not do very well over the next period of time. And, you know, Roger, we had talked a bit that if you think about the possible outcome of an inflationary bear market, you think about the other potential outcome of a deflationary period, and we don't know really which way things might go, we should really maybe talk to the listeners in this segment about some practical strategies. So let's jump in. If someone's, say, 50 years old today, they're listening to this, they want to retire in 15 years, and they want to protect their nest egg, where should they be looking? What should they be thinking about?
Well, you make the perfect point, in my opinion, is that we don't know what the future holds. I think, you know, we're going to have either an inflationary bear market or we're going to have a deflationary period of time. But even though, you know, we both may be wrong on that, but the point is we don't know. And so from my perspective, it's important to have a percentage of your capital invested in tactical strategies that don't predict or don't take a position on what the future holds, but rather have mechanisms to identify what is happening and to invest alongside those trends. Trend following, trend analysis, some people would call some of this momentum investing, whatever you want to call it, it is, in my opinion, it is a way to defend against the unknown future. And one of the problems, Dennis, with this asset allocation and diversification and what I say is the permanent bull market bias of Wall Street is that, as you and I both know, correlation ratios change. And what was very low, had a low correlation 10 years ago, may become very highly correlated. And in time periods with you know, financial crisis, of course, there are, you know, everything becomes really highly correlated. So the idea, or what I believe your listeners should be looking for, are advisors who understand the unpredictability of the future and have systems or strategies designed to capture what is happening and to funnel capital, some capital, towards those trends.
So, Roger, I listened to you talk, and I know some of the listeners out there say, well, you know, that makes sense. And then there's other listeners that maybe are taking a bit more of a devil's advocate approach and are saying, isn't that really market timing? And I've always heard that market timing doesn't work. Can you comment?
Yeah, well, you know, people that say, make an emphatic statement like market timing doesn't work, are really indicating that they just lack the skill to effectively time the markets. Now, that's a discussion. I don't have a hard opinion on that. From my perspective, rules-based investing has nothing to do with market timing. It has to do with describing how you'll behave when certain conditions present themselves. And then it's following that strategy for some of your capital over a long period of time. And the idea is that while I say diversification, you know, the classic diversification of assets won't be enough. What I think investors will succeed if they do in the future is diversifying sources of risk and return. And you do that by investing capital in strategies that behave very differently than other strategies in which you've deployed capital. And trend following, trend analysis, trend following is a proven discipline. I mean, it adds more alpha than almost any strategy over a long period of time. More wealth has been created and protected, by the way, through effective trend following strategies than any other strategy. So people that put up a wall and say, hey, that's market timing doesn't work, I think I ought to look a little deeper at these type strategies, because they're not, from my perspective, market timing is you look at a chart or you look at economic conditions and you say, this is the top, it can't go any higher, the world is going to end, and you go to cash, and it's all subjective. And the inverse is true at the bottom, or what you think is the bottom. So that's market timing, is when you've got a hunch and you a gut call or whatever that is. But when you're systematically investing in a strategy that sets forth rules and actions that you'll take when the market gives you certain behavior, that's not market timing from my perspective. That's rules-based investing.
Well, our guest today has been Mr. Roger Davis, author of Wall Street's Just Not That Into You. He is the CEO of Woodridge Wealth Management. And, Roger, if someone wanted to purchase your book or learn a bit more about what you do, what would you have them do?
Yeah, well, our website is woodridgewealth.com, woodridgewealth.com. And there's ways to contact us there. And of course, you can buy the book on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com, or, it's in most bookstores around the country, and it's been selling really well. It's been a real kick to see how the public has enjoyed the book. So probably the best way to reach me would be to go through the website, and we've got links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and the other type places if you want to buy the book through our website, or certainly you can go to your favorite bookstore.
Sounds great. Well, pleasure to have you on the program, and love to have you back.
Great, Dennis. Thanks for having me.
Let me remind you as we close this segment that we have a couple of additional resources available. Our Social Security Maximization Workshops will be held at three different locations during the month of March here in the West Michigan area. You can get more information or register by visiting socialsecuritydinner.com. And our new Retirement Rules class, which we get a lot of great feedback on, will be held on March the 12th. That's a Saturday. It will begin at 9, conclude at 2:30 p.m., More information is available at newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. If you'd like to become a subscriber to the Everything Financial Radio podcast, all you have to do is visit the iTunes store and search under Everything Financial Radio. The podcast subscription is free, and you can listen whenever you'd like. I'm pleased to have as a first-time guest on the program Mr. John Rubino. John is a co-author of the book The Money Bubble. His co-author on the book, James Turk, has been a previous guest here on the Everything Financial Radio program. John's website is dollarcollapse.com. And, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks for having me on.
Well, John, let's just jump in. You just recently wrote a piece titled Central Banks Fool the Markets Again, but Only for a Little While. Tell the listeners what your point was.
Well, the global financial system is so heavily leveraged. In other words, we've been borrowing money, way too much money, for the past 30 or 40 years, and that leads to instability. You know, countries are no different than individuals in that sense. If you borrow too much money, your life starts to spin out of control. So traders in the financial markets are desperate for adult supervision. They want somebody to tell them it's going to be okay, relax, we've got your back. And the central banks of the world, the U.S. Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan and the People's Bank of China, they do this periodically. They'll come out and they'll announce something like new quantitative easing, or we're going to cut interest rates from 0.1% to negative 0.1%. You know, the almost completely meaningless activities at this point because things are really beyond anyone's control. But the markets love to hear stuff like this. And so for a week or a couple of weeks after a big announcement by the Federal Reserve, for instance, traders buy financial assets, and the stock market goes up and bonds behave well, and things temporarily, generally seem okay. But then reality reasserts over the following couple of weeks, and people figure out that, you know what, they didn't fix anything. They just said some nice words. And actually, this is wrong. You know, the bank balance sheets are this, and commodity prices are that, and government spending is, you know, they start looking at reality, which turns out to be very dark and very scary, and people start selling again. So you get the pop that happened after the central banks talked reversed out over time. And we've seen this again and again and again. You know, there's a word for it now even called taper tantrum, which means when the central banks stop giving the markets what the markets feel like they need, the financial system spins into crisis. And the first part of this year was another variation of that. You know, January was actually the worst month to begin a year in the stock market ever. And so the reason for that is because the Federal Reserve has gone from flooding the system with new currency and cutting interest rates to actually starting to raise interest rates and contract the money supply in the U.S. because they're worried that they've cut interest rates to the point where they can't cut them anymore. And so they want to raise rates to give themselves some leeway to cut rates later. You know, it's extreme desperation on the part of the monetary authorities. And the markets are starting to react to that. So we saw the stock market just tank to begin the year. And then the Fed came out and made a nice announcement. They said, well, maybe we won't raise interest rates anytime soon. And who knows, maybe negative interest rates will work. Maybe we'll try that. And so stocks have gone up for the last few days. But now they're back to going back down again. So it could be that we've used up the goodwill, the illusory goodwill, that the Fed generated with its last announcement, and we're back into taper tantrum territory now. So it could be that the intervals in which central banks are able to fool the markets into going up without actually doing anything useful is contracting, and that people are losing faith in central banks. And when that faith completely evaporates, then it's game over for this financial system as currently configured. In other words, we can't continue to borrow huge amounts of new money year after year after year and cut interest rates year after year after year because we're reaching the limit of those kinds of policies. So either we try something else, or we just stop doing what we've been doing, and the markets collapse. And we're, you know, we're staring at that now. We're staring into an abyss, and it's very possible that we step off that cliff in 2016 because there really isn't anything left to do that can legitimately fix the problems we've created. We might just have to let them play out, you know, let this debt liquidate. And that means a global financial crisis similar to the 1930s Great Depression. And if we lean against it, if we try to avoid that fate by devaluing our currencies and creating more new money, like we've been doing for the last few years, then we get some kind of a currency crisis where people lose faith in the dollar and the yen and the euro and just dump those currencies, you know, by converting them into real stuff as soon as they accumulate any currency. You know, you get paid, you go out and buy something real that governments can't create more of on an electronic printing press, and that sends prices through the roof, so it manifests as hyperinflation. And those are pretty much our only two alternatives right now. We've got to choose one or the other, and we've got to choose very shortly. So this is a fascinating time from an economics theory standpoint, but it's a terrifying time for most people who don't know how to invest and absolutely don't know where to put their money going forward.
Well, John, when you mentioned that, you know, this could be game over for the current financial system, at least the way it's structured, what does game over look like? How will our listeners be affected?
Well, the money in your bank account will partially evaporate if we choose, like we seem to be. We're trying to devalue the currencies of the major countries in the world as aggressively as possible. In other words, make them less valuable so that their debts are easy to manage because they're paying back their debts in cheaper currency. Well, that's bad for you if you own some currency. So your bank account becomes a terrible place to put money. And generally, during financial crises, you get capital controls as well, where they might just reach in and take part of your bank account, or they'll stop you from being able to move money out of the country or even within the country to an extent. So first of all, the things you thought were very safe, like government bond funds and bank accounts, turn out not to be safe at all. They turn out to be very risky. Second of all, there will be huge volatility in the financial markets. In other words, stocks might go way up, but they might just crash, like we saw at the first part of this year. So your 401k or your pension also turn out to be a lot less safe than you thought they were going to be. So you become really, really financially fragile. If you're the average person, the money that you put away, saving for retirement or your kids' education or whatever, starts to evaporate. And the kind of volatility in the real world that financial volatility causes leads to layoffs and companies failing, and it just becomes very unpredictable. So at the same time, your finances are at risk. Your job might be at risk. So this is potentially catastrophic for a lot of regular people who've been playing by the rules and doing what they were supposed to do and who aren't at fault in any of this. So what's really despicable about government policy of the last 30 years is that it helps the rich by pushing up asset prices. In other words, they've made stock and bond prices go up and real estate prices by devaluing the currencies of the world of the last 30 years. And now the consequences of that are going to fall on the people who just listen to the government and save their money year after year and put some in stocks and some in bonds and some in cash, like a typical financial planner will tell you to do. All of those things are going to be at risk. And meanwhile, rich people are going to figure out a way around it. You know, they'll just buy other kinds of assets that that governments can't inflate away, and they'll continue to make money. So what we're really doing now is transferring wealth from the 99% to the 1%. And it's about as explicit as you can get. You know, this isn't really a hidden policy. This is basically what they've been doing, and they've been fairly upfront about it because the results of, say, zero interest rates are pretty obvious. Who does that hurt? That hurts people trying to save for retirement, right, or retirees on fixed incomes. You know, if you retired and you thought you were going to generate 6% in bank CDs on your retirement money, and now you're getting 0.1%, you're starving, or you're eating into capital, and you're never going to be able to actually retire because you're spending the money that you thought you were going to live on. Well, meanwhile, somebody who has tens of millions of dollars is hiring high-priced financial advisors to move them into things like fine art and London penthouses and farmland, things that are going up in this kind of an environment. So they make out at your expense, and it doesn't really look like anybody's addressing that who has a chance of winning any elections. You know, we're seeing a lot of people politically from fringe parties and people who never would have gotten a lot of votes in the past get a lot of votes in both Europe and the U.S. now. And the reason for that is that people are starting to figure this out at long last. You know, that the system is not working for the benefit of the average person. And so they're willing to vote for somebody like Donald Trump, who probably wouldn't have gotten a lot of votes in past elections, or Bernie Sanders, who's very far to the left, but who's saying a lot of things that people respond to now. You know, he's willing to break up the big banks and willing to try to change the calculus of the financial system so that it starts moving wealth back to average people and away from rich people. You know, a lot of these things won't work in the real world, but they sound like what you want to hear from a politician when you think the system is working against you. And so with financial instability comes political instability. And that creates a feedback loop where unstable politics makes finances even more unstable, and so on. And that's what we're heading into in this year, obviously, and then it's going to get more and more intense over the next few years as the system really breaks down. And it becomes very hard to predict with any kind of accuracy what happens a year or two into this process, because we've never been here before. We've never borrowed this much money, and we've never created this much financial fragility out there. You know, the big banks didn't get smaller after the 2008-2009 crisis. They were allowed to get even bigger, so they're even more dangerous than they were back when their failure almost blew up the global financial system. So
yeah,
we could have... Oh, go ahead.
John, no, I'm just going to have to leave it there for this segment. Fascinating conversation. My guest today is Mr. John Rubino. He is the co-author of the book, The Money Bubble. And I'll continue my conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Before I get back to my conversation with Mr. John Rubino, let me once again remind you, if you're just joining us, our Social Security Maximization Workshops will be held at three different locations on three different dates here in the Grand Rapids area during the month of March. March 1 will be at the Highlands, March the 10th at Stonewater, and March the 29th at Boulder Creek. To get more information or register for these free workshops, visit socialsecuritydinner.com. These workshops conclude at 7:30 p.m., begin at 6, and at the conclusion of the meeting, we serve a complimentary dinner. Consequently, these meetings fill up quickly. We also have available our new retirement rules class. It will be held on Saturday, March the 12th. The class begins at 9 a.m. and concludes at 2:30 p.m. The cost for the class is just $49. That includes the cost of lunch for you and a guest, as well as handouts and book for you and a guest. More information is available at newretirementrules.com. The website again, newretirementrules.com. My guest today is Mr. John Rubino. John's website is dollarcollapse.com. He is the co-author of the book, The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. And, John, I'm going to jump right back in again. You had mentioned in the prior segment that the wealthy were getting high-priced financial advisors to help them move their assets into things like farmland and London penthouses and fine art funds. And it occurred to me when you were talking that those assets are all tangible, real assets versus paper assets. Is that a coincidence?
No, it's not a coincidence. It's central to the process that we're in the middle of right now. And the important concept to understand when we're talking about this distinction is counterparty risk. Okay, with, for instance, a bank account, which is a financial asset, or the cash in your wallet, which is also a financial asset, there's counterparty risk in the sense that somebody else has to keep a promise for that stuff to have any value. In other words, the bank that has your checking account has to stay in business, and the government that issues the dollars in your wallet has to manage those dollars appropriately so they don't plunge in value. So you're counting on somebody else to keep a promise with a financial asset. With a tangible asset, with a real thing, nobody else has to do anything for that asset to have value. In other words, farmland is just farmland. It can grow food no matter what the government is up to these days. And same thing with fine art. You know, a Van Gogh is going to hold its value because it exists in limited quantity. You know, you can't make any more Van Goghs. Therefore, it's not going to be diminished in value by oversupply going forward. And the same thing with London penthouses. There are only so many of them. And the same thing with gold and silver. Those are the kinds of money that humanity has used for 3,000 years, and they've held their value throughout that time. So when governments start mismanaging their national currencies, money tends to flow back into gold and silver because that's where you can hide out when whatever currency is being used at any given time by the government is going down in value. And so it's no surprise as well that gold and silver have been going up this year during the period when stocks are getting whacked and everybody's starting to lose faith in central banks, because that's where you hide out. And so that's something that an individual can do. You know, you can buy silver coins and store them in a safe place and be reasonably sure that those things will hold their value over the next 5 years, no matter what happens to the dollar or the euro or the yen.
So, John, what percentage or what guidelines would you give to folks, which I understand those are dangerous because everything's driven by individual facts and circumstances, but if somebody wanted to go out and buy gold and silver, what words of advice would you have for them?
Well, I would say nothing is guaranteed in this world, so don't mortgage your house and buy gold bars. That might work in this scenario, but it's putting you at unnecessary risk. When you begin shifting your finances from financial assets to tangible assets, do it gradually. You know, do it a little bit at a time. That's called dollar cost averaging, basically, where you say, okay, I'm going to put $500 a month into these things. I'll take it out of my bank account. I'll buy silver and gold coins. I'll start looking at maybe a piece of rental property, something like that. And you do it a little bit at a time. And over time, you'll buy more with that fixed amount of money when prices of those things are down, and you'll buy less when prices are up. So your average cost is going to be reasonably favorable. And you avoid getting in just before something happens to make the market go down temporarily, because these are very volatile markets, and they bounce around. Sometimes they go way up, sometimes they go way down. You don't want to pick the way up period in which to do most of your buying. So be cautious, be steady, don't make any huge bets based on emotion, and over time it will probably work out. But again, nothing is guaranteed. This is uncharted territory, and we can't know what's going to happen this year, next year, or 5 years from now with any degree of certainty. So diversification in that kind of a situation is also crucial. You don't want to buy just one thing, because any one thing might not work out. So you want to move your money around into various kinds of tangible assets and in various places. You know, one country might do absolutely crazy things in the times that are coming. So if you have the capital to make this possible, you should move some money to different geographic locations. In other words, buy a Swiss insurance policy, or have some gold bullion stored in Hong Kong, or buy a Costa Rican beachfront condo, stuff like that. And in that way, you've got at least some of your capital beyond the reach of the local tax authorities, at a time when you have no idea what the government is going to do, you know, how desperate the government's going to get, what kind of price controls they're going to impose, what kind of wealth confiscation might happen, what kind of tax policy. You know, we're going to negative interest rates right now. And that's actually a tax by the government on savers, because if you put money in the bank and interest rates are negative, you have to pay them. And that money flows directly into the hands of the people who have made out for the last 10 or 20 years. You know, the 1% love it when interest rates are negative, because that will tend to push up the prices of the stuff that they own at the expense of savers who are stuck with dollars in a bank account. So,
well, we're gonna have to, John, leave it there for okay. today. I'd love to have you back. John's website is dollarcollapse.com. He's co-author of the book, The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. I'd encourage you to check it out. And, John, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Dennis.
Well, be sure to tune in to the Everything Financial Radio program. Next week, I'll be talking to Mr. Steve Hochberg. Steve is the Chief Market Analyst at Elliott Wave International. I'll also be talking with Mr. David Skarica. He's the author of the newsletter, Addicted to Profits. Some of you may recall I had David on the program about 3 months ago, and he said that the market was ready to correct. Certainly that did happen, so we're anxious to get his take on where the markets might head from here. As I close the broadcast today, let me just remind you of a couple of additional resources we have available. We have our Social Security Maximization Workshops. They will be held in March on the 1st at the Highlands, on the 10th at Stonewater, on the 29th at Boulder Creek. You can get more information or register at socialsecuritydinner.com. And when you look at where things are today, economically speaking, private sector debt levels are at $57 trillion. Government debt to GDP is in excess of 100%. These debt levels are at historic highs, even higher than prior to the Great Depression. I'll be talking to Steve Hochberg about this next week. But in light of these facts, we think you need to understand that when debt levels have been this high in the past, what has happened to investment asset classes? And that's the focus of our new retirement rules class. I would encourage you to attend if you've not yet done so. At the close of the class, you have a valuable resource that we believe will give you some necessary perspective moving ahead. If you'd like to register for the class or get more information, go to newretirementrules.com. The cost for the class is just $49, as I said. And again, the website to get more information, newretirementrules.com. Well, that's our program for this week. Hope you got something you can use. We'll be back again next week. Bye.